Hey, what's up, everybody? Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Let There Be Talk. Today is Wednesday, May 17th, and this episode is brought to you by my fantastic motorcycle sponsor, the one and only for 1 year strong, El Cajon Harley. Do not miss out on a great Harley-Davidson. Head to El Cajon Harley. Tell them I sent you. They sponsor this podcast, so definitely don't get your motorcycle anywhere else except from them. How cool are they to sponsor our comedy podcast? Those guys are rock and rollers. They love their work down there. They love motorcycles. They're not just your standard employees. These guys are two-wheel experts. Head in to El Cajon Harley. Maybe you need to get your bike serviced or get yourself some motor clothes like a new helmet or gloves or a leather jacket. And maybe you want to get a used bike. They got a ton of great used Harley-Davidsons and they can get you financed. Go see my boy Greg Riley at Harley-Davidson of El Cajon. Fly into San Diego, get off the plane or take a train, whatever. Amtrak goes right there. Greg will pick you up. Then you'll be on your two-wheel machine. They got the brand new touring Milwaukee 8 engines. And Sturgis is coming up. I'll tell you what, I've been to Sturgis 6 times. And I'll tell you, I will never forget each one of them. If you've never done it and always dreamed of going, maybe you just go there and rent a motorcycle from El Cajon or buy a used bike or a new bike, whatever. Get to Sturgis this year if it's your dream. El Cajon Harley. Follow them on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And don't forget, they've got a fantastic ride coming up to Petco Park where you can ride from El Cajon Harley to Petco Park and watch the Giants beat the Padres. That's right. The Giants will beat the Padres that day. Go Giants! El Cajon Harley. All right, let's get into the episode. A couple days late. Sorry. I've been running around with my head cut off. And out of the 5 years, I've only probably been late twice. And sometimes just shit catches up with you. And you're like, wow, I got to fucking just take a couple minutes to myself and then I'll get the episode out. And also, you know, wrangling up guests. It's been, I looked at it, I was talking about it a couple days ago. These guests are mostly personal friends of mine. I've had pretty much all my friends on. So now I've got to work extra hard and wrangle up dream guests and cool handmade guests and all that kind of stuff. So it's a constant work, but worth it. I love doing it. I love that you guys love the show. It's getting bigger and bigger, which, by the way, keep leaving those reviews and subscribing on Instagram. That's how we get this thing in the top 100, and that's how we get better guests. Let's see. What's going on today is Butch Walker returns to Let There Be Talk, which is about a year ago. I had Butch Walker on and boom, what a fucking massive episode. I met all kinds of new friends from that episode because I didn't know there were so many cool Butch Walker fans out there. And from that, if you're a Butch Walker fan, I know you're into good music or art or motorcycles or 80s rock or anything, the gamut of what Butch Walker represents, which now is amazing roots rock and roll. If you're into Springsteen, if you're into Wilco, you're into some heartfelt music, and you've never heard of Butch Walker and you missed the last episode, start with Stay Gold, his latest record. Unbelievable. Lots of records, massive music producer. He's done some of the greatest records in the last 10 years. You'll hear about some of the new stuff he's working on now. We also get into some politics. We get into social media and love of all things cool. I'm glad Butch did it. Got up early, went over to his studio and hung out. Had a great time. Saw some more of his guitars, which is always cool. Played a little pinball, $6 million man. And had a great day. I know you're going to enjoy this episode. And thank you, Butch, for doing it again. What a great guest. I could talk to him for for many, many episodes. We relate to some stuff on so many levels, a lot of stuff. What's happening, you guys? You all good? Let's see. Real quick, just going to get into some dates coming up, and then I'll get out of your hair. This Sunday, if you're going to Rock on the Range, I will be on the comedy stage with Jim Brewer. That is the Metallica Day at Rock on the Range in Columbus, Ohio, this Sunday. Check us out from 6 to 7, I believe, on the comedy stage. Then what else do I got coming up? Of course, always at the Comedy Store, a bunch of dates this month. Then I'm going to be, here's some last-minute dates. I'll be with Pauly Shore in Portland, June 2nd and 3rd, Helium, I believe, Portland. Also, Brea Improv, June 8, 9, and 10 with Joey Diaz. Smoking shows, all these shows coming up. Then I'm going to be headlining Minnesota House of Comedy, June 14th through the 18th. I'll be at the Ice House, June 23rd in Pasadena. Boston at Nick's Comedy Stop, June 29th. I will also be at the Stand in New York City, June 26th, 27th, 28th. The 30th, and then a bunch of dates in July. Also, July 14 and 15, catch me in Grand Rapids with Bill Burr. I forget the name of the place, but I think it's something like The Church. And then Toronto, Queen Elizabeth Theater with Red Band, Ian Edwards, Sam Tripoli, and myself. That's a four-piece rock and roll group right there. July 27, 28, 29, Toronto. And that's the dates right now. Oh, one last minute. This just in. I got to find that date. June 21st, I'll be headlining, run an hour at the Comedy Store in the Belly Room. I love all you guys. If you want to donate to the podcast, it's patreon.com/DeanDelRay. I've gotten some great donations recently. Thank you, everybody. And also, if you pre-ordered a shirt, they will be going out next week. All the shirts will finally be shipping next week. I love you guys. And Nikki Six coming up on an episode. And also, Michael Devin and I are going to be doing an episode talking about LA Rock and some other things. Here we go. Candles lit with my main man. Welcome him back to the podcast right here, Butch Walker. All right, here we are, another episode of Let There Be Talk. Great guest, the return of my man, Butch Walker. How are you, buddy?
Hey, dude. Good, man. How are you?
Oh, man, I am good. What a day today. It's beautiful out. We're here back at your studio. Every time I come here, I'm just like, oh, I need to live here, man. I just need to make like a little bit of money just to be in like this is all I want. Like, this is it.
I mean, I don't know if you have to have money, you just have to like fool a couple of people for a couple of years, and then you can like afford to have a little spot. But
some
kind of
some shake and fake,
a little shake and fake. And I treat it like it's you know, it's man cave is a dated term. I think it's more just an escape hatch for whenever I need to be alone too, because I like to be by myself a lot.
Me too, man. Are you only child?
No, but. Theoretically, having two older sisters that didn't really, God bless them, and they've been, we're all really tight now, but like when I was growing up, I was the whipping boy.
Yeah.
They beat the shit out of me. Oh. But you know, it was definitely fun to, you know, I was very creative type, like, and my son's an only child, and he's very much the same way. He's just always off in the backyard walking around doing imitations and voices and coming up with characters. And
oh, he could be on SNL pretty soon then, you know?
Guess what his favorite show is?
What is it?
SNL.
Really?
For a nine-year-old.
Wow, man. He must love Melissa Villaseñor then. She's the one that does all the great impressions on there now.
She's awesome. He loves them all. I mean, I think his favorite is definitely Alec Baldwin.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, him doing Trump has been incredible for great entertainment.
Oh, what and a godsend
Kate,
year
Kate
for
McKinnon,
them.
She's incredible.
Yep.
You know, every one of her impressions of other females are incredible. So he gets it. It's funny to see a nine-year-old get that humor sometimes.
I think that's about when I started watching it, maybe 8 or 9. because I was watching, I'm 51, I was watching the first, you know, seasons.
Sure, you and, were like, you were OG with Garrett Morris and...
Yeah, Garrett Morris, I did a film with him later on, which became full circle. It was a fucking mind bender, like, oh my God,
that's
dude.
That's awesome.
Like, you don't understand.
Gilda Radner.
Oh, yeah. Belushi.
Lorraine Newman.
Yep, yep.
Jane Curt.
Yeah, yeah. Curtin. And then, you know, you get into the Bill Murray era, you know. Man.
How incredible was that?
Oh, God. It's just insane, man. Caddyshack.
Yeah. You watch those SNLs now, though, and you realize how when people 20 years from now try to watch current SNL,
yeah.
A lot of kids, when they grow up, they're not going to understand any of the humor because it was so socially and politically pop culturally charged.
Well, that's what that whole show is.
Something would happen in the news and 2 days later, SNL would cover it.
That's what's great about it.
And yeah, it's great. It's awesome. But when you watch the old ones, it's really hard to get the humor because there was so much time sensitive material that if you weren't even born yet, or if you were just a kid and you didn't keep up with stuff like that, then you wouldn't get all the political references or anything like that. So I think about that all the time, thinking like 20 years from now, when some kid sees Alec Baldwin being Donald Trump, they're going to be like, I don't get it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If we're alive, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. It's good to be alive to say, whoa. I don't get it.
Yeah, you know, I was watching this movie, and God, I forgot the name of it. I'm so pissed. It's a fantastic film, an indie film, about an improv troupe. And one of the guys scores a role on the fictitious style Saturday Night Live. And while they're watching the show, one of the guys said something great. He goes, our era was so much better. And he goes, was it really? Or were we just, you know? Because as we all say that, it's a lot like eras of a band. You know, whatever era you were involved with, that's your era.
We were just talking about that. And I've talked about it in interviews and on the streets and to anybody. And you have too. But it's like, you know, people get emotionally invested in something when their lives are simple and great, and there's no bills and no kids to feed and
yep.
no college to do and no whatever when you're in high school with your ass being wiped by your parents and you're living in their basement. You know, it's all fine, and everything that you listened to and loved and watched on TV, it reminds you of those times when you see those now in retrospect.
Absolutely.
And so it makes people go like, oh, you know what? It's nothing. They just don't do them like they used to.
Yeah, whenever they say that, and we were just talking about it, and I've really just thought about it over the last couple months, and I know that some people get angry by it, but I realize that 90% of music fans or movie fans or whatever, it's just time machines for them. That's all it really is. They're not really a music fan. They're a fan of the memory.
That's right.
You know, like, oh, I didn't have any bills back then. I first started smoking weed. You know, I got some posters in my room, man, and I don't got to worry on the planet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, but that's just not true. And that's what I love about you and people that survive in this business. We are fans of music, well-built shit, handmade stuff, great films, great art, paintings or whatever, and it constantly blows your mind up like, oh God, look at this.
Yeah, just being able to soak in something new every day and be inspired by it. I mean, as an artist, I want to say fuck those people,
right?
Because that's just like, you know, it really makes you mad that people won't move on and won't accept anything new into their lives or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yep.
But But I get it. I totally understand.
I do too.
I understand that sometimes there's people that their best, the best it's ever going to get for them and the best it's ever been for them was like, say, high school.
Yeah.
Or college.
Yep.
And for me, I couldn't wait to get out of it. I hated it. It sucked, you know?
Yeah, I hated high school.
I was like, I'm in, you know, God love my little town of Cartersville, but I couldn't wait to get out of there when I was 17 years old and moved to Hollywood and try my luck in a rock band and see different cultures and different people and, you know, hear new music and new sounds and see new looks and fashion and
travel
everything, man. I couldn't wait. And so like, I just remember parents telling their kids in high school, which I thought was the kiss of death, being like, well, just love, appreciate this while you can, because this is the best it's ever gonna get. And then you look at them and go like, wow, yeah, you must be miserable with your life now to say something like that.
Yeah,
you know. And then that's why people sit on Facebook 24 hours a day and talk about the good old days, and they can't wait for their high school reunion and all that. And it's like, I mean, no offense to those people, I had some nice friends in school and stuff, but I don't miss any of that shit, man.
I barely remember it.
Because
I've lived so much of my life.
Yeah, it's not drugs and alcohol.
No, it's life.
It's life. I literally have, you know, and I'm not just sitting here going like, oh, I'm so fabulous. But like me having the beauty and the blessing of being able to go out and tour the world without money, you know,
yeah.
You can, by the way, this to everyone out there, you can do it broke.
Oh my God.
You can backpack the world. You yeah. can, you can see the world. You don't have to spend, you know, $1 million to do it. I didn't make a damn dime till my 30s in music.
I just read this guy, he has a thing where you can see like 27 states for like $280 on Amtrak. And he's got the whole setup, man. And I was like, you know, there's no excuses. I think, and it always comes down to the same thing, credit card debt. People get locked down in that, and then their life's over.
It's really
bottom line that, or
it really
fear.
Is. Yeah,
you
fear.
Know?
Fear is the biggest
fear.
Thing.
Yeah.
Fear is the biggest thing, because especially if you were like, say, the popular kid in high school, and you know, you like shit on the geeks and the nerds in school, and you were, you had everything you wanted, the trophy, like cheerleader girlfriend, everything was great for you. And then after high school was over, you had to leave and go to, let's say, either a college where you were all of a sudden nothing.
One of a million
dudes just like you, or like you had to go get a job at a factory and be humbled right away.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden take authority from others. That's a way of life for a lot of people. That's a way of life for most people. But, to be honest, it doesn't intrigue me or excite yeah. me, you know? And I think a lot of people would think like, oh, I remember my dad, who died, you know, my best friend, by the way, but we had a very tough, time in my teen years, because I know that he came from a small town, small trajectory.
You should do this and go to this and go to that.
And like, he was basically a high school dropout. I mean, he barely got out of high school and joined the Navy. So he wasn't very scholastic or anything. So it's not like this guy had like, I think he just thought that I was going to be a loser basically.
Right.
If I chose the arts.
Yep.
And I can't say enough how...
Especially that whole Midwest world, man.
Yeah.
You know, the arts, it just doesn't even, come about, you know? It's funny because...
No.
You know, you talk to people that are out there, they're like, yeah, my brother, he did this, so I went and did that.
It's always that.
It's always the follow, you know?
Eighth generation this.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, okay, fine.
There's something cool about that.
It's romantic, but...
Yeah, and I always say we all can't be artists. But I do believe that, and I said it when I got ran over on my motorcycle as I was flying down the freeway, I was sitting there going, no regrets.
No regrets.
And I do believe also that if you really want to do something in life, especially these days, man, it's pretty brutal out there. You should go do it.
That's right. Well, and I might have even said this on the last time, but I remember my dad always, he said to me one time, he said, I'd rather regret not doing something. Does that sound, did I say that right? No, I'd rather regret doing something
exactly
than not doing it is what
exactly.
I mean to say. I always get that confused.
I'd rather make no money doing what I love than tons of money doing what I hate.
That's right.
Man, there's nothing worse than working. I mean, I worked at Harley Davidson and all of a sudden was making more money in my life than I ever made my whole life, you know, selling motorcycles.
Yep.
And for a couple of years, yeah, this is pretty good, you know? And then I realized I was spending all that money trying to fill holes in my heart of like not being on stage anymore.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden I got 9 motorcycles.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a heavy, heavy high rent in some place I'm supposed to be loving, you know? And just after a while you're like, Nah, I'm better off with nothing and doing what I love.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's when I was coming up playing, and I moved to LA to be in an original band. I had a lot of older musicians in the Atlanta area telling me I was crazy for going out there because there's no money in it and there's a million guys on every street corner that can play better than you, and that's true. But you know, these were people that were playing Bon Jovi covers, yep, and cover bands because they could, or like, you know, whoever, like playing in an Aerosmith tribute band or, yeah, something, which, by the way, if you, that's great. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. That's awesome. But I just didn't think I would be satisfied. I needed to know inside what was going to satisfy me. And I don't think I was going to be satisfied playing other people's songs, which is kind of a blessing and a curse now, because if I ever get up to jam with anybody, I don't know any covers.
Yeah, right.
I can only play like the first like two bars of any song ever written, but then I don't know the rest of it, you know? So I'm shitty at doing covers or sitting in with people, you know, to jam. I'm like, I don't know. I play my own songs my whole life. I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Maybe that one or two covers you do on a tour. You know what I mean?
Right.
Exactly.
That had to be rehearsed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's funny you're talking about people sitting on Facebook. You're off social media now, and which is a very tough thing when you're a guy like you or I, when we don't have, you know, we've got to constantly toot our own horn. Because there's not somebody out there doing it. I mean, you got your management that do some tweets and stuff for you, but why did you get off it?
Well, I got off of it because, you know, this is a touchy subject for a lot of people, but I don't give a damn. It was the election, basically. Right. I am very outspoken about my politics.
Yep.
And I don't like the fact that any jackass randomly tells artists to shut up, stay in their lane, stick to what they know. You know what? Fuck you.
Yeah.
Because I'm a taxpayer. I pay a shitload of taxes.
Yeah.
I'm a parent.
It affects us more than anyone.
That's what I'm saying.
An artist, healthcare is the number one fucking thing.
Right.
You know,
you go to Canada and they, not only does the government fund the arts there, but they support them too with their healthcare. I'm just saying that, and I'm not sitting here like saying like, oh, I'm not a patriot of America. Yeah. That's not true. It's more just, I you know, I have my opinions, and I've found that this was a platform a long time ago, social media, for me to voice those. And long before any election mattered as much as this last one did to me.
Right.
So I didn't like the fact or appreciate the fact that when this happened and all of a sudden we saw our country so polarized about this, because it was a big deal, that it would actually turn people away from artists that they like because they can't handle, especially if they're on the other side.
Yeah.
They can't handle when you have an opinion about something like that or voicing it. They just want you to be a wind-up toy, a monkey that plays songs.
Yep.
Get on the stage and sing. You know, it happened with the Dixie Chicks before even social media existed.
Remember
and
that?
You know what? I commend them, and they're one of my favorite country acts, too, because they were actually honest.
I mean, Nashville tried to pull a full boycott on them, which was
so
like,
stupid.
What I don't really understand is, as an artist, you know, these people, it's whoever you vote for. Now, let's get this straight, too, because people, you know, we're talking about both sides, you know, but for to completely abandon someone for their religion or their political beliefs or their sexuality, it just blows my mind that you're going to be like, wait a minute, he's gay and he's a Democrat and he plays rock and roll. Fuck all that. You know?
Yeah. Except for like, you know, I like Michael Jackson because he's one of the good ones. I actually heard things like that said out of people's mouth in my high school when they would use the N-word in a derogatory fashion. But
unbelievable.
But then they would go to see Prince in concert or whatever. And it's just like, you're such a hypocrite.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, you want to be entertained and that's it.
Yeah,
you don't want to have to think or be challenged. And that's one reason I got out of that. I got out of the church. I got out of all that stuff because I couldn't stand the blinders that were on in those worlds. Couldn't stand how close-minded everybody wanted to be about issues. And And then when social media, let's say, you know, and I'm not trying to like turn this into a platform right now to get political or anything like that. But it was also compounded with the fact that, you know, let's talk about a real reason, the real, like down to the heart of the matter was you're sitting there addicted to this form of narcissism that wasn't available in life until now.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, everyone matters. When people that only mattered before were celebrities and athletes and, you know, and politicians and things like that. So all of a sudden now, you know, anybody that's got, you know, a great body or a cute face.
Or a fucking pug dog.
Or a dog.
Yeah.
And not really any talents or anything to show for it.
Right.
Can have millions of followers and views and likes and stuff. And they base their whole day and their whole existence on it. And I got sick of going to dinners and people not even looking up from their phones the entire fucking time. And it's like I see couples sitting there having dinner, just two of them at a table, never even talk to each other the entire time.
Yeah,
buried in a phone, and then you catch yourself doing it.
Oh yeah,
and I catch my
because you're sitting there bored.
I would catch myself doing it and go like, I guess this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And then I would think to myself, man, if the aliens came down and saw us right now and said, you know, their species is very interesting. They walk around with these computer screens, basically tied to their face, and they're staring at the ground while walking and bumping into things.
Yeah.
That's kind of embarrassing. And then, you know, just there was a quote that somebody said in an article about it that I read that really was one of the turning points for me to get off of it was it said, people are spending more time now trying to convince the world that they matter instead of doing something that matters.
That's so true.
And that's so fucking true.
It is.
That's crazy.
I think the problem to me is...
it's just self-validation.
I think the problem I have with it, which is a real bummer on a guy like your scale or mine, is...
you have to have it.
Where the industry says, well, how many followers
they
have?
That's right.
Which is fucking such a bummer because you want to be the organic artist... And
I'm not kidding. I'm not fooling anybody. I have to have it.
Of course.
It's my only form of advertisement.
That's what we're saying. We have to have it.
For my career.
But, you know, I said this, you know, over and over and over, this podcast and my comedy, if the word of mouth was as strong as it was in the 70s, you know, you and I would never need social media. But what happens is people just figure that everyone has social media and everybody knows what's going on, that they don't tell somebody about it. That's why when I love a band like this band, Greta Von Fleet, right now, I'm telling everybody about it because it's laziness. They're going like, oh, well, I didn't tell you about the Let There Be Talk podcast because I just figured you knew. Like, don't you see it on social media? Where before it would be like, dude, you listen to this podcast, man? It's fucking great.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then there would be this great, passionate conversation of like, no, I don't like that one, man. I like this one here. What do you mean you like that one? It's the same. This one's better. You know, and you'd have great passion at a dinner or an argument at the high school fucking locker, you know? But that's the problem. Word of mouth doesn't exist anymore because of social media. People just figure you know.
Right. And like I said, I don't want anybody to think I'm being self-righteous here. It is a necessary evil.
It is.
We need it. And that's why when I went to my manager, he was like, dude, we'll run it for you. You don't need to do this. We do it for our other artists. I just was always hands-on doing everything myself before I even had management. And that's just, it was a hard pill for me to swallow to give that power and control up. But it's the best thing that ever happened to me because my son even said it to me one time. He said, he made a comment. He was like, you know, Dad, sometimes when we're hanging out together, you're not really with me. And I was like, oh God.
Wow.
You know, and
that's heavy, man. How old is he?
9.
That's amazing that he notices that.
It is amazing. And it's also good to hear because then you kind of just look in the mirror and go, I'm not going to be part of the problem.
Yeah.
I don't want to be part of it. I got enough faults, you know, no one's perfect. I need to like work on so many things in my life. One of those things is just being there.
Yeah.
I want to be present again. I want to live like it's the 90s again. maybe also, not sound like
you know what
names,
I think
I
too.
Look, I want it to be like yeah, it was yeah, yeah, back when yeah. you could like.
Hey,
you
had now you're sounding like these old fans.
Yeah, 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 totally. Now, man, get now you're one of them, together. But why don't you, play guitar solos anymore?
Also, I think that songwriting, lyric writing, and joke writing, and storytelling is. You need to put down shit and look around to get information into your head to write something. If you're just staring at the phone all the time, your brain stops learning. You know what I mean?
And it's just getting information and not knowledge.
Right. Exactly. Well, you're not like, it's like if you go on the computer and you go, wow, there's the Grand Canyon. Wow, there's the Eiffel Tower. It doesn't get into your heart and your mind, but when you go to the Grand Canyon and you stand there and look at it, you go, what the fuck? Look at this thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the way you take in that information is so different than just a photo, you know?
Well, it's more important for people now to just say, look, I was at the Grand Canyon. Here's a picture of me with the Grand Canyon.
They don't even take it in. It's a selfie and gone.
Oh my God. I was joking about it with a friend of mine the other day because now I'm real sensitive to it. It's kind of like when you ride a motorcycle through traffic and you notice everyone's on their phone in their car.
Totally.
You don't notice it when you're in a car. You notice it when you're on a motorcycle though, where you can't
every
be on
day.
It.
Every day.
You can't have a phone in your hand.
Yeah.
And then you're looking out for people that are weaving into you because they're checking their Facebook. And while they're driving, which yep. just sounds insane.
I killed that biker because I had to check Facebook real quick.
That's right. You know? Man, I'm glad I did too. I got 14 likes on this picture of me.
14 likes. And then I snapped a photo of the guy I ran over and I put it up on Instagram. That
got
7,000 likes.
I just took a picture.
Fucking nuts.
I videoed the accident.
I think that's the thing I love about motorcycles and doing stand-up the most. It's the time where I feel the freest.
And that sounds, I say it all the time too, because it's not just a cliche of like, you know, freedom and the wind, whatever. Everybody associates that with like old biker language, but it really is. You're free from devices. You're free from conversation and you're alone with your thoughts.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely, man. It really is, dude.
I feel charged when I get done with it, like mentally charged.
Like a ride to Big Sur, you know, like if you do a ride to Big Sur or something and you get off the bike, a lot of times I ride alone, you know, and like if I'm going to San Jose to do a spot, I'll take the long way or, you know, and I'll pull off and I'll be getting gas and my brain feels awesome. It's really weird how great it feels because it's just like, wow.
Well, you know, and we can obviously move on from this, but just to talk about like the computer screens and the laptops and the phones being in front of your face all the time. I can remember just being a child of the 70s and 80s and then living 3/4 of my life without devices attached to my hip, which they always are. I mean, you've seen me 3 times already here have to respond to a text while we're doing this interview, which is very like hypocritical of me, but I'm telling Todd not to walk in the door while we're doing the, podcast.
Yeah.
But basically it's, there was a time when that stuff first came around and I remember I got my first computer and the internet happened and I remember getting sucked in for the first couple of times.
Yep.
And then I also remember feeling physically almost sick. I felt awful. I did. I felt almost nauseous and physically sick, not from anything I saw, just from, there's something about like the, maybe it's
the rays coming
off the radiation and whatever. I don't even know. All I know is it didn't make me feel good. And now it's how we feel every day.
Yeah.
Cause we're just immune to it.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you went to an island with no phone for 6 months, would your energy be up and stuff?
Yeah,
you know
well, that's
I mean?
What this interview I read that I'll have to send to you that kind of was the kicker to get me off of social media for the most part was this one telling me the one I read you the quote from. It was a person that went to literally a rehab retreat.
Oh yeah,
a rehab retreat for cell phones for social media.
Oh, I mean, you know, I was addicted to booze.
Sure.
And
if you have an addictive personality.
Absolutely. So you get, and they've proven it over and over and over. It hits the same dopamines as cocaine.
Someone gets a like or someone gets
right.
a comment.
So people are constantly on it.
Yep.
To me, I think it's more about a lot of times it's so monotonous, the boredom out there of like long lines, traffic, airports. It really saves me from that.
It does. Everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it makes the time go by nice where you're not sitting there going like, fuck this line at the airport.
And that's a good point. But I loved like when Louis C.K. was like, I'm not going to give my kids are not ready for phones yet. I don't want them to be in line at coffee and not have to deal with actually just waiting.
It's so true. Cause then you start thinking about stuff and living your life and shit, man.
Maybe even talking to a stranger, God forbid.
Yeah. Instead you can't even talk to strangers anymore either because they're like creep. Yeah. You know what I mean? Creep.
Yeah.
And also the thing that really blows my mind is how no one will talk on the phone anymore.
No.
You know, they just press standby, they press bypass, and
now
then they
text. Really sound old because this is like one thing I noticed with working with
younger musicians.
With like younger people in the studio all the time.
Yeah.
And having younger engineers and stuff like that, where they'll literally send your call right to voicemail and then text you right back.
And the thing about it is, you know, why do I want to send 40 texts on what time should I be here?
Yeah.
It's this. Hey, Butch, what's going on? Yeah, I'm running 10 minutes behind. Okay, I'll stop and get coffee. I'll see you there. Bye. Instead of, hey, running behind. Next text. Well, how long? Not sure. Mm-hmm. Let me check real quick. Oh, GPS says 20 minutes. Go get coffee. Okay, I'll see you there. And now that's 10 minutes of my fucking time.
Right. And there's a fine line between somebody calling you up every 5 minutes. Hey, what's going on?
Yeah, I don't.
What's going on?
That's not the 70s.
You remember? Yeah. Remember the people that you would say bye and they would say bye and then they'd keep talking.
Yeah. Long story short.
Yeah.
Oh,
you'd be like, okay. They'd say like, I'm sorry, I got to go. But anyway. And
that sets the South.
That's so.
Oh, you ever get somebody on the phone from the South?
Yeah.
And they're just like,
oh yeah,
you could put the phone down, take a dump, come back. And they're going, yeah, and then I don't know, the tree got cut down, but then Jimmy said don't cut the tree down, and then you know the neighbors were all mad. You're like, what the fuck?
Totally. And you know what though, there, like I said, there's a fine line between that and I think people just let's go ahead and call it what it is, the younger generation that has grown up way more, maybe, do you think maybe they've grown up a little bit more socially inept?
Yeah.
Because they have only had devices to communicate with. So when they've actually had to have a conversation.
Oh, they suck at it.
They suck at it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been so much of that.
No communication skills. And also, they can't handle any kind of a little bit of drama. Let's say it's not drama, but you're just like, what do you mean, dude? You're like totally late. And they go like, why are you yelling at me?
Right.
I'm not even yelling at you. I'm just saying, you know what I mean? They can't handle any interaction.
That's entitlement. And that's big. That's big these days, sadly. But, you know, hey, the world's a great place.
It really is. I mean, we are
and social media is a great platform. I hope that people understand out there listening that this is not a jab at that. It's more just figuring out how to make it work for you and still be a human. Still be a human being in life and still function and go through society, being able to deal with things if that were taken away from you.
Yeah.
That's all.
If I wasn't in the business, I would have zero social media.
Right.
Zero.
Yep.
I mean, to be like in an office in Oklahoma and just be on social media all day, like, why? Try to find something else to burn that time up with, man. Make some fucking money. Like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, man, all this time I'm going to do something here that'll get me, you know what I mean? It's crazy. But I do love Instagram because I love looking at stuff like cars, guitars.
It is fun. It's like an encyclopedia of pop culture.
And it also teaches me a lot of stuff about who's out there when I'm looking for people to have on the podcast as far as like handmade stuff or like that Porsche event I just went to. How do you say it, man?
Porsche?
Luftigold. Yeah, Luftigold.
Luftigold, yeah.
What does that mean? Do you know?
I have no clue.
Me either. But I gotta get Patrick on this damn show.
Yeah, Patrick Long. He's awesome.
Man, you and I are 9/11 freaks.
Yes, very much.
And I went to that event last week, and man, I tell you what, I think it is the Instagram star. I mean,
yeah.
Everyone is tweeting about or Instagram about this event, man. The it's cars great. There. To yeah. see the, all these cars in one spot was insane.
It's overload if you're a car junkie, especially Europeans, you know, European cars. I lost my mind last year going to it just cuz I'd always, since I was a kid, had a you know, fetish for Porsches and always wanted one. And just for some reason, never got one. And I think a lot of it was like, my wife's always telling me, oh my God, don't get a Porsche. You know, because, right. you know, keep it real, bro.
Yeah. I love when people say that. That's an interesting thing, because we'll get into that. Because
well, it's a stereotype. It's really just like people with a Jaguar or people with a Corvette or whatever. They think it comes with like this, like... midlife crisis.
Yeah.
It comes with like compensating for something or whatever, but I kind of equate it to anything else where it's art.
I'm the same way. It's fine art. It's something that was finally made by handmade by people in another country. If you think about, it's like when I always talk about Def Leppard. When I went to where Def Leppard's from, right?
Sheffield.
And you walk around Sheffield and you go, how the fuck
did
these five guys come out of this fucking place? Look, America's big. I can see the odds of you maybe making some noise in America as a band, you know, but to be in a corner of a planet and to write some songs and to get a demo out and then to fucking start playing in London and then come over to America and become one of the biggest bands ever. It's the same with me with Porsche or anything Rolex. When you read the history of it, it's always one guy. And how the fuck, which Porsche just rolled off the 1 millionth 911 this week. The 1 millionth, you Woo. Know. And you think about one guy who was like, you know, like the Rolex guy. When you read the history, he's just like, you know, he's buying these timepieces back when people were using pocket watches and only women were wearing wristwatches. And then all of a sudden, he's buying these wristwatches that someone's making in Switzerland and then putting, you know, his name on them. And then he goes, I'm going to make my own. And then it becomes Rolex or Porsche or fucking Ferrari. How do people relate that? I guess so many idiots own them, but you know what I mean? The point is,
yeah, that kind of thing, yeah.
These are pieces of fucking art. They're handmade machines. And if you're into great stuff like this 46 knucklehead here, you understand history, art, and fabrication and everything comes into one. It's like songwriting, you know?
Yep.
Also, after a while, you're like, okay, I've always wanted to... I always say if I didn't have any good taste, I would never leave the house. I wouldn't leave the couch.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because I would have no desire to try to, you know, buy something. Like, yep. Man, my dream is to have a 911.
Yep.
Well, if you don't have any dreams...
Then why
get off the couch?
Hell yeah, man. I mean, I bought that $6 million man Bally pinball machine from the 70s with the first money I ever made from a royalty check from making music back like 20 years ago and was like, and I still have it and I'm very proud of it and I love it. But like, yeah, man, I mean, fuck it. I made my way. I worked hard. I worked really hard. Yeah. It didn't come easy or cheap or free for me. So like... I went out and bought an 84 911 SC, you know, Porsche, yep. And I love it because I appreciate its craftsmanship, and I drive it almost every day, and it's fun, and it's fun for me.
Yeah, it's like I think that people really love the hero when they're broke. Bruce Springsteen's one of the only guys. Bruce, let's say AC/DC. There's bands out there that I think. That people still think Bruce might have to work at a factory next week.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, because he's kept such a humble character his whole
also,
career.
Also, you don't see a lot of photos of his car collection. Say a Jay Leno with 7,000 cars. People are like,
he's in a different one every week.
Yeah, whatever. But with Bruce, the Ramones, AC/DC, you know, AC/DC, if you guys are listening right now, I hate to break it to you, but that's a $1 billion industry.
Oh, AC/DC. Yeah, without a doubt.
$1 billion. If you don't think so, you're out of your mind. The second biggest selling record of all time. Just that alone and the merchandise of the logo $1 billion.
Unbelievable.
And not once have I ever seen Angus in a car or a jet.
Right.
Or a fucking yacht. You know what I mean? The facade of that is definitely well kept, right?
It's a blue collar brand.
It's a blue collar. You think.
You think.
You yeah. think. Yeah. But I wonder what those guys like Angus, you know they're private jetting, but they never Instagram they're on a jet.
Yeah, I've never seen him in the back of a JetBlue, you know, like on the way to a show or anything like that.
No.
That's for sure.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing because people love to champion you on the way up. And then if you get somewhere, they want to whip you down. You know, this fucking guy in his Ferrari, fuck these rich Hollywood people and all that mentality, which is really strange because they love their heroes until their heroes make it.
Yeah. It's a really fascinating walk of life to see that happen to somebody that, you see examples of it so many times and, It's where the comeback comes from. Like the comeback is huge.
Yeah, it really is.
The term comeback, you know, and it only happens because what if those people really never went away? It's just you kind of rooted for them to fail.
Yeah.
After they succeeded, and then oh man, I need them to come back because I need to know that they're destructible just like I am.
They hit rock bottom. I'm part of that. I made him hit rock bottom because I stopped fucking stealing their music.
Oh, man. It's such a crazy world we live in.
I'll tell you one of the craziest things. And I'm trying to work it into a bit right now. But I was at a show recently. And the guy said, can you believe the fucking ticket price here? $250 to see these guys? $250? I mean, what the fuck? When I was going to shows, it was $8. And I said, dude, you think that $250 is for this concert? And he goes, what do you mean? I go, it's for everyone in here that stole the last four records, that bought the bootleg t-shirt in the parking lot, that fuck it. You know what I mean?
Right.
They're getting you for the four records you stole.
Right.
You thought you stole those records, but no. Now you've paid $30 a piece for the records.
Right.
And then a couple bootleg t-shirts and then the, you know, and now the concert. That's an all-in package.
Right.
Because of what happened to the industry.
Right. Some compensation.
Some compensation, man. And people don't get that. And I realized it as I was like, well, yeah, it's $250, but when was the last time you bought a record?
Right, when minimum wage was like $1 an hour.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, that I can understand when concert tickets and album prices and things like that were, I remember when they used to be $4.99.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's minimum wage.
That's when you bought them.
Minimum wage was half of
And also, that's when you bought records. So $4.99, $4.99, $4.99, $4.99, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now, when they're $20 or, you know, $10.99, $9.99 on iTunes and no one buys it, now you're going to pay at the concert because that band needs to make money somehow to survive.
Right.
You know what I mean? So next time you're stealing a record, just buy it instead and the ticket might be 25.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's such the truth.
It is true. It is true. And I hope that it does, you know, I hope it evens out a little bit for everybody, but I mean, you know, we're in a different world now. We're in the digital age, and that's not going to just go away.
That's not
going to
change.
It's not going to change until a meteor or whatever. I mean, we're in it. We have to deal with the consequences, and we have to figure out how to adapt and move through life with this the way it is now. You know.
Well, you just were out on tour. The last time I had you, Stay Gold was coming out a couple weeks in a couple weeks, and then you went out on a full tour of the record and. What was that like, you know, because you've been doing this, like we say, on a blue collar term of going out and touring. Did you come home in the red or because you go out with a band and it's tough as fuck, right?
It is tough. And that's a great question to follow up our last conversation, because, you know, the one thing I've never done as an artist, let's make it completely clear that, you know, I've gotten, let's call it, financially stable for the first time in my life over the last several years by my producer
exactly
job. which is a great job.
No producing, there would be no more Butch Walker tours.
Well, no, they would exist, but
not with a band though. Solo.
Yeah, I would probably be in a Corolla driving yep. around by myself in a van, or driving around with an acoustic guitar, which I've done before, and
exactly.
it'll probably happen again. And that's the best way to actually look at your career and look at you know, life, is that at any given time, are you willing to still do it if you have to do it that way?
That's dead on right. That's dead on right.
And absolutely, I would. And I've had to. I've through the years, I've had some, you know, this is an ebb and flow, you know, financial situation with this business. And so there's been many years throughout the years where I've, you know, walked away with a good paycheck for the year and could be extravagant and, a little frivolous. And then there's other times where I've had to like tighten up and go, shit, I got to sell a couple of things. I got to go out and tour with an acoustic guitar. And a lot of times fans don't understand that. Of course, they don't know that a lot of times you know, they get pissed when you don't ever come to Seattle or the Northwest or whatever. And it's like, you know what? I can't afford to. And don't tell me that I'm some rich producer guy, so I can't afford it.
Yeah.
No, I don't do that. I don't cross collateralize. I don't cross those two career paths at all. My when I do a record or I go out and tour as a singer, songwriter, guitar player, whatever, musician, that is self-funded. If the minute it ends up costing me money out of my own pocket, I won't do it. But if it means I have to do it tight,
yeah,
then I will do it tight because I still love doing it. But I'm not going to go out and have a band and a light show and pay a bus driver and a bus, which people
have no idea
how expensive a week it is to go out that way. It is so, it's thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars.
The bus is $5,000 a week.
That's right. That's a given.
That's just the bus.
Not including the driver, not including the maintenance, not including the hotels for the drivers, not including any of that.
Yeah.
So it is very expensive to do it that way, but yet again, I'm not complaining because I've gotten to, over the 25, 30 years of touring, I've gotten to get back in the van and do it. I've gotten to get on the bus. I've gotten to get back in the van and do it for no money. So I appreciate it when I do have a good year and I do get to tour it that way.
Yeah.
So that being said, the last tour was great because the album was very, it seemed very positively accepted.
Great record.
Thank you. But like the fans loved it. They bought the concert tickets. Most of the venues were sold out, and it was some of the biggest places I've, you know, gotten to headline to date in my life. Even when I had songs on the radio back in my, you know, my radio band days. And that's pretty great considering it's an independently released album every time I do one, and there's no radio and there's no support that way. It's word of mouth.
Yep.
And,
word of social media is the new term.
And believe me, it was, you know, posted every night, social media, and still will be for tours, but it was great because, people really reacted well to it. I took out my band, who are amazing. We had a great crew. All the shows were amazing. I got to like play songs spanning 20 years. And it felt really good to do it and come home. And actually, if it breaks even when I go out and do that, then I'm doing good.
That's great.
Yeah. So when I travel like that and it's that to that capacity, it's nice to come home with a little bit of money in my pocket from it and say that it still matters, I guess. Because, yeah. I mean, this day and age, man, a lot of people in my position just give it up and go, nah, I'll just make records for other people because that's where the steady paycheck is.
Yeah.
Or I'll just go be a touring guitarist for an arena act or something and, you know, play in the wings and make a paycheck. And that's good, too, for whoever can do that. Bless them, you know. But I'm just lucky, I guess, that people still care. And I like to think it's because I still care. You know, when I do a record, I take it very personally.
Yeah, absolutely.
I really care. When I make one of my own records, I mean, I don't want to just phone it in, you know? You're not going to please everybody.
It's so much work to make a record too. I couldn't imagine phoning one in. Like I tell people, like, you know, to go do a record, man, it's almost impossible to phone one in, because you're just like, oh God, I got to go there every night and, you know, leave my house and then, you know, work, sit down and get some arrangements and write some lyrics and have other guys at the studio. Once you get there, you better mean it, man. Or else you do.
And especially when you've got other things on your plate that could be like, you know, I have to put my producing career on hold whenever that happens. And you're turning down calls from really great artists that want to work with you and to help them make their records. And you got to say, I can't right now, 'cause I'm going off to do my own thing.
Yeah.
And that doesn't compute with a lot of people, especially the industry people. They're like, oh really? You still do that? Why do you do that?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. They're like, you're on the other side too. Don't you see how bad that is?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And that's the truth. You do live and learn on it helps you, I think, when you do the side that's, let's say, the producer-writer side for other people. It helps you as an artist maintain a little bit of perspective, I think, because you can easily lose that sight and that perspective if you're just an artist. I know I did in my early years before the blessing of being having a side career as a producer came along.
Yep.
So it's pretty nice to be able to go out and do it and it still matter.
It's interesting to see a young band come in, and do you sit there like I do? I think about it a lot. I've never done anything for money or anything, but I do like to think that I'm working my ass off for longevity in the business. It's not about money. I always tell people about that. You don't understand. It's not about money. It's about being able to do the thing year after year after year.
It's the marathon, not the sprint.
That's it. So when a young band comes in, like right now you're working with the Struts, do you look at them and think, are young bands delusional? Do they still think there could be some a next big Metallica or U2? Or do they just do it now and think, this is what I do now in life, and later I'll get something else?
Well, it's like you said a minute ago when we were talking about it, you just sit on the couch if you didn't have dreams. And so I love hearing an artist come in to the studio when I'm working on their record and they've just got this massive, massive plan for world domination.
Yeah, which is cool.
And it's great because you don't want to be the salty old dude.
You don't want to be that guy.
I remember my first record deal.
Yeah,
you know,
because Christofferson and Stars Born.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. You give it a get out now, you know?
Oh, man. On a side note, I just played a show with him.
Oh, what?
I play this charity every year for Matthew McConaughey that he does in Austin that is awesome. And I got to play with Christofferson.
Oh, does he play anything from that? Like, watch closely now.
You know, he just did like the big ones, like Sunday Morning Coming Down.
Yeah, Bobby McGee.
Help Me Make It Through the Night.
Yeah.
And it was awesome, but like I literally walked up to him beside him, and he's kind of hanging in there, but it's tough now for him. He's older, and so I remember walking up to him, and I was like, man, that was amazing. He said, you were amazing up there a minute ago, and this was like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah,
and he goes, man, I don't even remember that.
Wow.
He said, I don't really remember.
Does he have Parkinson's or something?
I think there's a little bit of that in there, but it was beautiful to hear. And also there's a blessing to that. To me, I feel like there's sort of a hidden blessing in that of like, man, I want to write so many songs about that, about like the beauty of not remembering certain things and the beauty of not, I'm sure it's, I mean, I know it's been done. I know Glenn Campbell, who's, you know, been dealing with it.
Yeah.
But like, going back to the question you asked, which was, it's really awesome to have an artist come in and have those just giant, almost unrealistic expectations.
Yeah.
And projections for what they're going to do and what they're going to be. Because without those, they won't get there.
You're right. You're right.
They won't
get there.
And also
they won't have drive.
No. And so it's really sucks. It makes me mad at people that, But whatever, because I got mine. But like people when I was younger were telling me the same shit. And they're like, oh, they're like, man, you don't need to move to LA. You ain't never gonna make it out there. There's too many people that are too good.
Yeah. When I started comedy at 44, I remember I went on a road trip with two kind of salty seasoned comics. And, you know, I had a great set. and it was just starting to, I was really getting knee deep into it. And I remember that all the way home, all they were doing was trying to shoot piss on my fire, you know? And they're going, yeah, man, take a look at us, dude. Take a look at us. This is where you're going to be. You know what I mean? We've been in the game 15 years. And I said, you know what? You guys aren't me.
That's right.
You guys are not me at all, because I wouldn't be in this car 15 years in the game. Dude. So we're already fucking different.
My favorite guy in this relates to that is my favorite dude in The Decline of the Western Civilization Part 2, The Metal Years.
Chris Holmes?
No, that's not my favorite part. That's least favorite
part. That's the sad part, right?
Because I moved out to L.A. as like Wasp being one of my favorite bands at that time. Like I loved Wasp.
Right?
Like, I loved fucking Chris Holmes. I thought he was a maniac, which he was.
Yeah.
But like there was just, that was that allure, that and Guns N' Roses and all those bands at the time that I was like wearing spurs on my cowboy boots and leather pants.
Fuck
in Atlanta going like, I'm getting out of this town. I'm coming to LA. I'm gonna get off the bus.
I'm
like
getting in a goddamn mansion.
I'm gonna get off the bus with the hay straw in my mouth like Axl Rose did in the video. You know, I mean, that was like, that was big dreams. But like, I remember watching that movie, the documentary Penelope Spheeris did, which is fucking amazing if you haven't seen it.
Both of them, one and two.
And two being the one on hair metal, it was like, it was equal parts like just taking the piss out of that scene, and its vapid nature.
Yeah. The bloatness of it.
And also the heart and sincerity in like the people that really, really thought they were going to make it.
Yeah.
And my favorite dude is the guy with the hair that's like the black hair on one side and the white hair on the other, I think it was. And
the Michael Schenker hairdo.
Yeah.
The flying V hairdo.
I might not even be him. It might be the other guy.
Right.
But that when they interview these kids that were just like no-name dudes on the Sunset Strip and unsigned hair metal bands at the time, and she's like, what are you going to do if you don't make it? And he goes, oh, I'm going to make it.
Oh, I love that part.
And then she goes, well, no, but what if you don't? And he goes, No, you don't understand. I'm going to make it.
I love that.
And then he doesn't because we would know now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But like,
well, he's selling toner over in the valley.
He's definitely selling toner. And I've been there.
Me too.
I actually delivered business cards for an ink printing company as my only job in LA when I moved out here on Ventura Boulevard from one end of it to the fucking other.
Yeah.
And that's a long...
That's a long fucking boulevard.
Dude.
And that's a boulevard, as Green Day would say. Ventura Boulevard is definitely the boulevard of broken dreams. Not Sunset.
Not even Sunset.
Because Sunset, if you're on that side of the hill, you're still somehow in the game.
We thought bands made it that hadn't even been signed yet because they lived in Hollywood.
Absolutely.
They lived on Sunset Boulevard. They could afford an apartment because probably they had a stripper girlfriend that paid for it, or most of them were drug dealers.
Yeah.
But like we had to live in the valley.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which valley's rad, but like it's awesome. But like I love the fact that like that was the epitome of that movie to me, was like that spirit and that drive. If that's not existing in every person that walks in and works with me, if I'm producing them, then you know I'm not in on you because I don't believe you. It's easy just to be like a rich kid, or you know, your parents be famous, and then you go, oh, I want to make a record, and then some jackass A&R guy signs them because they're famous.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be easier to sell it because of their name. That doesn't work for me, and I can smell it a mile away when they come in here. A lot of times those people are not very driven.
Yeah. Well, that's my thing. It's like, fuck you to those two guys all the way home telling me I'm not going to make it. If you put a handful of guys in one room and just told them they're all not going to make it, that's not true. Because one of the people is probably going to get the fuck out of there, you know what I mean, and survive, you know. So it's like, why waste your breath on telling that person, just look at us, man, and you'll see your future. And it's like, because I'm already way older than you guys and I'm doing this right now.
Right.
So I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Right,
I've already made it.
Right. You're not dead.
Yeah. I'm 44 doing comedy. You're 39 and you're telling me, hey, look at your future. It's like, No, that's the past there.
That's the past,
know?
Yeah.
When I was 39, I was already doing better than you.
Right.
By not doing, you know what I mean? Like, it's right. insane, you know what I mean?
That is amazing.
Now, what are you up to? Now, you're working on the... on some new records?
I'm working on a couple of records for people right now because this has just been a great year for work, for people coming to me to make records, which is great. I like having an excuse like that to keep me from making my own music. And right now that's been doing it because...
And who are they you work with?
I worked on this this record that just that's just now coming out called, or it just came out. I don't keep up with the business side of it anymore. Yeah. That's what kills me. If I keep up with it, it kills me.
Oh, 6 copies sold. We did so much work.
No, it's more about making the records and then that's an accomplishment to me. So, but this group, Mr. Wives, I just did a record for them. It's really cool. Mr. Wives. Yeah. It's a female fronted band. It's kind of like old No Doubt and old Madonna.
And are they new band?
They're a new band, yeah.
And where are they from?
They're really young. They're from Brooklyn.
Oh, badass.
And they're really...
Brooklyn is so fire right now.
Oh, man. And they're great, these kids. They just were out on tour opening for Panic at the Disco on their arena tour, who I've done a couple of records for as well. And so that was a great tour for them because it was just sold out every night.
Yeah.
You know, massive, massive audiences. And they're doing really well. That's come out. I've got a... this band, The New Politics.
Oh yeah.
It's really cool.
Oh yeah.
And so I just did their new single, and I'm working on, as we speak right now, I'm working on the rest of their record.
Wow.
And their new single just is about to, looks like it might crack the top 10.
No shit.
Yeah, it's top 20 right now. So I'm psyched about it. And it sounds very Queen heavy, you know?
Yeah,
so
I think
you'll dig it.
Yeah, kind of like The Muse, you know, they're heavy Queen.
Yeah, yeah, less serious.
Right, I got you.
It's way more fun.
Right.
Like when Queen
it's more like Another One Bites the Dust,
when
Queen.
Queen is like cheeky and does like, you know, crazy little thing called love and stuff like that, but still sounds like Queen. So these guys are great. They're crazy live. They're a fun, crazy band.
Where are they from?
Denmark.
Denmark, badass.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? They're Danish. And so I worked
and then
on
also
that. And then the Struts I'm working on right now, which has been really fun because they're an English band. Speaking of Queen, you know, they've just got this amazing like glam 70s thing that it's so what I grew up playing and know so well that like when they come walking in, they're even wearing the same clothes that like I wore when I was their age, which is beautiful to know that's like, whether it's come back around or not, it's beautiful to see. And it's beautiful to see their spirit. They think bigger than life. I love that. They think on a very large scale.
I love that too. I love the people that
singer,
are willing
Luke
to.
Luke is very, very,
that
very
are living
serious.
It, you
very,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. They're very, the whole band is great. All of them can play their asses off. And see, that's the thing is like, you can, sure, that's cool if you've got like a, if you've kind of latched on to a sound or a thing, and but like these days, it's a bonus if someone can actually play.
Oh,
which is
yeah,
a
that,
sad thing.
That's
to
That's got
to
be weird, right? When you're coming in the studio and a person comes in, and they have you ever had someone come in? Because I've worked.
I'm gonna say yes already. I don't even know what. You're
and they just
say.
Can't even sing.
Yes.
Yeah. And are you blown away? Are you? Is the A&R guy actually here? Going, just make it happen.
Yes.
I wanted to talk to you because. I've seen it, and I know big bands where the guy, I was in a studio making a record, and they're like, yeah, we're doing this band's record. And I went in the studio, and they're like, the guy's just over there fixing the whole vocal. The guy couldn't sing at all. And is it weird? Like, how does somebody in the A&R department at a label go, well, this guy looks really good. That is only on the looks. Only on the looks, because...
It's,
wow,
because
there's guys
is.
Out there that look good that can sing.
Yeah.
How lazy are you not to just find a guy? If you're going to fabricate something, at least get the guy who can sing.
You know, I'd love to do a documentary. This is just off the top of my head right now, and it's probably a horrible idea or it's already been done, but I would love to do a documentary on the session players of the 80s.
Yeah.
Because when, you know, for anybody out there listening, the... You know, the way records used to have to be made was on reel-to-reel tape.
Yeah.
On actual analog tape through analog equipment. No digital, no tuning fixing.
No vocal
timing
flies.
Fixing.
Yeah.
No, if there were warts on your recording, that's how they came out.
Yep.
they had the warts when they were delivered and mixed and mastered.
Well, that's why drummers didn't work.
That's right.
They were like, this guy has bad meter.
So it was just like, I remember coming up in that time and being in bands and getting signed and having to work with other producers and then also being producing other bands that were in the same boat before digital, before laptop, you know, recording became a thing. There, it was very, very... You had to be really good. And that's why records took 6 months to make back then. Def Leppard could make Hysteria in 3 weeks now.
Yeah, you're right. Because the guy would just, he would just 7,000 triple track, not play the guitar, play the guitar. Now, bands, people don't understand. The guy comes in, he just comes in, he's like, you know, I love you, baby. Okay, I'm going to go see my girl, just fix that. And they just sing for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, and they just, and they're ready to leave.
It's crazy.
Yeah, and that was the way it was making records back in the day where you had to like, you had to bring in session guys, which were the heroes, unsung heroes of the of our time.
Yeah.
You know, the drummers, the bass players, the stunt vocalists.
Oh, even. Yeah. Yeah. The fucking, yeah, oh, dude, the guy in the background.
I still remember this guy. What was his name? Tommy something. Funderburk.
Yeah.
That was the name. Wow. Tommy Funderburk. And he was the guy I remember back in the 80s that basically all the producers would have come in to sing all of the... like backing vocals because nobody in the bands that when they couldn't sing or even sometimes to carry the like difficult lead parts.
Yeah. Wow.
Or reinforce, let's call it.
Yeah. Yeah.
We call that a double.
Yeah. Like reinforcement.
Reinforcement, vocal reinforcement.
I remember Eric Martin was doing that for bands.
He
you
sure
know?
Was. Mr.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Big.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was doing backing vocals for like Y&T and,
totally.
And oh yeah. And all those guys back in the day.
And then you had the drummers that were getting, you know, paid to play on all those records and the guitar players like Lukather and, and I mean the list goes on and on. And then, that bass player, what was his name?
There was dudes that did every session, there's like three drummers where I lived and they were always doing, one of them became the drummer for, Third Eye Blind, but he was like the guy that played with everyone, you know.
Yeah, he's real good.
Yeah, so it's crazy these guys would be out there and just do sessions on. I remember guys would be like, I gotta go to LA and play on like 9 records.
I know, and you know that doesn't exist that doesn't exist anymore because of the producer can fix it on
well,
a computer.
You're the fucking drummer and the fucking backing singer now and everything with a computer.
Yeah, you can do it. And it's and so it's a whole different place and time now for making records. So I always tell people that, and I think it's important as a up and coming musician that or like an aspiring producer or whatever, as stupid as this sounds and kind of like, you know, archaic, find a working 4-track recorder.
Yeah. Either, on eBay.
Yeah. Either
Fostex, Tascam.
Either cassette if you really want to be old school and have fun.
I love those.
Oh, I love mine. I did a whole record.
I saw
record.
It. It was in there, yeah.
Yeah. I did a whole like a record called Cassette Backs.
Yeah.
And that's like it was like outtakes and B-sides and stuff, and I did it all on the 4-track. They also make hard disk ones that don't have any editing capabilities. It's just a 4-track. Learn how to record on that. First, don't get I hate to say it because GarageBand rules and it's really convenient and really fun. And actually learn that too, because you need to learn it.
You need to know
how to do digital these days.
I learned GarageBand for the sake of this podcast. It would not exist unless
That's
I learned.
Right.
And to learn, and people go, well, I don't really understand how to do that. You're looking at a guy who didn't fuck with computers until the DSL line happened. You know, right, I was like, this shit is too slow. My brain moves too fast. I remember a guy would press a photo and go, look at this. And it'd take 18 minutes to load up. I'm like, dude, I got shit to do.
Yeah.
But in order to make this podcast work, I had to learn editing. I had to learn, audio. Of course, I've been in the studio all my life, but I never fucked with computer stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was like, oh, what? And now...
But it's just so fun to be able to start at ground zero with where it all started and learn the basics of that, because I think it will teach kids and give them an appreciation for how, not just how hard it used to be, but that it's still possible. to make great records.
You become a better songwriter too,
and it will make you better. It makes you a better. It really does. It makes you a better player.
You find out about you live with the song for a little bit, and you go, "This song's a little long. Maybe if I chop the bridge a little bit here. Maybe if I did a double chorus at the end or whatever." And you can really learn all that stuff from recording it and not being able to just fly stuff around.
Right.
You start to learn discipline on songwriting.
Right.
Which is, you know, songwriting is an unbelievable thing. I was just recently writing some songs with Keith from Buck Cherry. And it's amazing to hear his ideas up against mine because I hadn't been in game for years. You know what I mean? He's like, well, actually now they wouldn't even go. You know, if you listen to country songs, there's no more pre-chorus anymore.
Right. You know, chorus, yeah.
It just comes straight on the verse. The verse is very short. And then it's like, I've got a pickup coming down. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And it's all about ADD listening, man. It's really weird. Get to the fucking hook. Get to the meat right away. Grab them and carry on.
Yeah. The preview, like on the song preview on iTunes kind of ruined it for everybody when you could like, you only listen to like the first 30 seconds of every song. That's pretty much how people listen to music now. They listen to the like 30 seconds of a song. I remember being such an old man when DJ culture started like really, really getting popular, especially in LA. Like, and this is not like, I'm not talking like real DJs. I'm talking like, you know, playlist DJs.
Yeah, yeah, the button pressers.
Yeah, and so it was funny to me to like go to one of their like sets. Not even go to a set. I'd just be at I would be at some stupid club and there would be a DJ. And then they would play, they would mash up all these songs one into the other. And that was what DJing became.
Well, they're all copying AM, DJ AM.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
DJ AM was the first guy to really fucking hit with these awesome mashups.
Yeah. And the mashups were fun. And I remember sitting there listening to them and go, man, this shit's awesome. It's really fun that they're mashing this stuff up. But what bothered me about it as being an old man, from an old man perspective, was I was like, fuck, man, they're only playing like 20 seconds of this song, and I want to hear the whole song because I love this song.
It's so cocaine. It's basically, it's all the high of cocaine without going to score it or robbing to get the money. You know what I mean?
It's cocaine coming out of the speakers.
That's all it is. It's just, boom, you're high. Boom, you're high. Here it is. It's Teen Spirit mixed with Pour Some Sugar on Me. You're like, whoa, two fucking massive hits. You know what I mean?
Right. More,
of course
more.
It's going to be great. It's all the fucking meat of every song.
Yeah. Did you ever hear that Girl Talk guy? Girl Talk was like, he put out a couple of records. The record he put out was, and I say put out a couple of records, but it was all mashups. The clearance must have been insane to have to deal with that. But it was basically just one 45-minute mashup that just went from one song to the next. Art form in itself. Plus, he did it on like a really piece of shit PC computer like that was basically put together with duct tape. And, you know, I thought that was pretty fun that he
did. My boy Dweezil, I liked how he did mashups where he did them live.
Oh, cool.
With the fucking band in the late 80s, early 90s, they did 101 songs. As one song.
See, that was...
And they played that shit live with, like, Scott Tunis and you know, Josh Freese.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, and they got it down to, like, if a song had black in it, you know, like, the word black, so it'd be like, you know, and the sky turned back in black!
Totally.
You know, I mean, they fucking had the shit down. That's early mashup live.
I know, and that's incredible.
And I never forgot that.
No,
I remember the first time I went to their rehearsal over in the Valley at Frank's Garage, and Scott Tunis is like, yeah, we do this thing, 101
Dude,
songs.
You already just had me at like Frank's Garage.
Oh, yeah, right?
I love to
hear them do this, like, it was just, I'd never seen a band do it ever in my fucking life. And you'll never see it again because it's so intricate and crazy to learn.
Did you see that last Frank Zappa documentary, Eat That Question?
Oh, I'm dying to fucking see
you
that.
You have to see
I
it.
I know, because...
I tell everybody to watch it.
I've been
it.
Dying to see it. I went to go see it at the theater, and I missed it on the day at Sunset 5.
No, you just go rent it on iTunes or whatever. Buy it. I bought it.
Because
I'll still watch it, and by the end of it, I'm always crying. You know, it's not that it's tragic or sad. It's tragic and sad. We lost him to cancer.
Yeah.
You know, at a relatively young age.
Totally.
But it's tragic and sad to have lost one of the greatest minds in music.
Yep.
And people don't know that. And I was a late bloomer on him. I mean, when I was in, whatever, when I was in high school and, yeah, you know, Valley Girl came out or whatever, it was cute. I was, yeah. But he would say the same thing. This guy was composing and arranging, you know, like classical music when he was 15 years old.
The shit
he was
already
on another level. And that's all he did. And watching this, you see him literally while he's doing interviews. It's all interviews throughout his whole life.
Right.
Like, you see him at a piano and with no shirt on, skinny as a rail, like in his like 30s maybe. And he's just sitting there literally with a razor blade and whiteout. He's copy and pasting, literally copy and pasting on sheet music, different parts that he wants in different parts of the songs. That was before computers, you know?
Yeah.
And he's just sitting there doing that while like talking to this interviewer and not missing a beat. And he would like, there would be no pause for a question for an answer whenever he was asked a question. And it would be it's just the most profound shit coming out of his mouth and his
brain. Oh, that guy's epic, man.
And it was, it'll really, really inspire you if you watch it, I think. Especially, you don't have to love the music. And matter
of fact, it's
about
that,
acquired taste for
so many.
It's like
I say about the Bob Weir film. If you don't like The Dead, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. That film is epic.
And that goes back to what I'm always saying again, of just ground zero of these geniuses of, you know, like guys that just like, think about Grateful Dead, just the timing of them having, you know, they're in the Haight-Ashbury. It's cheap to live there. They got a whole house. This fucking scene starts happening. Acid comes into the game and the whole world changes. Same with Zappa though. You know, he created music no one was playing.
He popularized, you know, jazz in rock and roll.
Absolutely.
And I always wondered why when I was a kid, he would always be on the cover of like Hit Parade and Cream magazine and Circus and Guitar Player magazine. I'm like, who's this guy? I don't know any of his music.
Yeah, this guy's not on the radio, you know, when you're growing up.
Right, and he would be the first one to be like, I'm on the radio? That's really weird.
Yeah, you know?
He didn't
care
about that.
No.
But it really is incredible.
Like 54 records or something he made.
Yeah, and it's hard to keep up with them. Like you can put one on at night and listen in headphones and it'll just be like, whoa, man.
Yeah.
For a guy that did
and
not
no
do drugs.
Yeah, no drugs.
No drugs allowed.
No drugs allowed.
And that was what was crazy is this was drug music to everybody I knew.
Yeah.
Everybody was like, oh, that hippie drug music. And I'm like,
that's what Dweezil said on my podcast. I said, how did you not ever do drugs? Because you grew up in the 80s and we were like way into them, you know. Everybody was doing drugs, cocaine and stuff. And he goes, I remember once I was at my dad's concert and, you know, we were on the side of the stage and his dad was like, you know, look at these fucking people out here, man. They're all on drugs. Look at, they're just losers. You know what I mean? Basically, like, if you want to do them, feel free to do them, but look at those people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then Dweezil's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to be one of those fucking people. Fuck that. You know what I mean? We're talking about his own fans, you know?
He had the most amazing, he had the most amazing mind where he would just, he would say, you know, he would go off on things about, and I always loved his weird, like, conspirator brain, too, about the government.
I love that.
Oh, man, it's so great to watch because all of it makes perfect sense.
Yep.
I mean, everything he says is like when he starts talking about how, you know, we're capped at what our mental capacity is by the government and by the school systems, because you look at these kids that are already in Harvard from India when they're like 10.
Well, they don't want any smart people.
No.
In America,
right?
That's why the schools are shitty and everything, because if they get smart, they'll be like, hey, fuck, you guys are out of here.
Oh, yeah.
You money people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's why the internet's so big, because it's all geared around advertising.
And man, even though a lot of it is, I frown a lot on the fact that now kids only know a lot of information and not knowledge because of the internet and things like that, I still am happy that like it's nice to see a little progress there, whereas like when I was their age, we were not as near as
We only had the newspaper.
Not near as smart.
Whatever they're telling us in the newspaper.
That's right.
Or your parents would tell you.
Right.
You didn't have fucking a goddamn globe and a machine. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, totally. Holy shit, man. I mean, the only shit I knew, like, would be the neighbor's dad, you know, he's like working on his car and he'd spit some yarn at you and you'd be like, oh, all right. You know what I mean? You know? And then the other neighbor's dad would have like records and you learned from him about music and
that
you
was
know
it was that very was it. Simple and slow way of learning, but like, you know, it'll eventually get you to where you are now, but now it's just people are just they my son is doing, you know, science in his third grade class that I can't even explain.
Yeah,
I don't even know how to help him with it. I'm
yeah.
like
yeah yeah
I feel like a fucking idiot.
Yeah, you're just like, hey, here's a C chord.
Yeah.
Exactly. Speaking of that, man, I saw your new your Yamaha SG 2000.
Yes, sir.
Now, I love those. I had Dave Medichetti on, and growing up, of course, Carlos Santana played them. But really, to me,
yeah,
it was
your Bay Area boys.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. And oh, which by the way, I just got the Santana Woodstock Record Store Day, and I really feel that Santana. There's two records that are so underrated, Santana, first of all. But if you get this Woodstock record and then the other one, Live at the Fillmore, and listen to this fucking guy, I'm telling you, Santana is one of the baddest fucking guys of all time.
Abraxas?
Unbelievable.
And Amigos? Like, Abraxas was like, my mom, when I was young, my guitar teacher, who was this just incredible... He was a Berkeley grad,
right?
And he loved Santana, like old Santana. And you know, people out there only know Santana as smooth.
God, it kills me.
And it's like, no. This guy, like, he was a monster on the scene in the '60s and '70s, and spawned a little band called Journey.
Yeah. Yeah, that Greg Rowley and fucking
entire
Neil
band.
Sean.
He had
yeah.
Neil Sean when he was 15 years old on guitar with playing all afro.
Full fro.
Right. Was it Michael Shreve
yep.
on drums?
Shreve.
And then he had...
later on, HSAS.
Oh, we could go deep on that. Pete Townsend.
Ooh.
He was also Pete Townsend's guy during the Give Blood... what was that album called? Face Value. That's Phil Collins. Sorry. Anyway, but I used to play Europa off of that album by Santana all the time for my teacher because he made me transcribe it on guitar off of sheet music and stuff when I was like 14.
Yeah.
And my mom loved early Santana, and so she couldn't believe I knew how to play Europa, so she still would make me play it all the time.
This guy, man. Yeah. I mean, when you listen to Santana... Live at the Fillmore, man. And you just go like, oh, wow, man. I mean, you know how he gets to play Woodstock because the guy's putting Woodstock on, basically asked Bill Graham to help. And then he goes, I'll help, but you got to put my guys on Santana. No one had heard of Santana until that fucking day.
They were so on fire.
Oh, and the word is he took acid. He didn't think he was on for hours. This is what I heard.
Right.
Somebody told me. I don't know if it's true. But Jerry Garcia was like, here, take some of this. And then they knock on the door. You're on in like 20 minutes. So he said the guitar was like snakes.
I remember reading that.
Yeah, he's like, I don't even know how I was playing. It's just the neck was like a snake, you know, but oh my God. And Greg Rowley, dude. And
Greg
those early Journey records.
He sang Black Magic Woman.
Yeah. I recently got the first three early Journey records on vinyl, and these things are fucking smoking masterpieces.
They're
Journey
really,
next.
Really great.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, same thing. People go, they're late to the party and they think,
Don't Stop Believing.
They think Journey's only like Separate Ways, which.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yep.
But even further back,
Infinity Records.
Infinity.
One of the best records ever to come out
amazing.
Of the
amazing. And that's when Steve Perry was a guest vocalist.
Yeah, he just joined.
He was just a guest vocalist on the album.
Well, that's the killer of it. Out of my life, into my way. You know, and then he comes in, oh, on a soft Saturday night.
Like,
can you feel it? Oh, they're like,
the feeling that way.
That shit is crusher.
It's
two
so
vocals.
Good. The guitar. And you can see where Neil Sean's guitar playing was adapted a lot by Santana's groove.
Yeah.
Like a lot of that melody, a lot of that sustain, a lot of that, like that, just the tone and the feel it all came from, I feel like, from him playing with Santana for years.
I believe it, because it's just that kind of that Hispanic Mission District, those like conga grooves and everything.
A lot of people would like castrate me for this, but like a lot of a lot of people were on they were team Grateful Dead then, but not me. I was team early Santana. Like,
right.
That was, I just think the music to me was so interesting. It was and plus just with all of the, just with all of the polyrhythms and counterrhythms of all the Latin infusion in
forget it.
Like that stuff is insane.
Fuck.
Like, you know, like I get the tradition and I get the culture of the Grateful Dead, but
yeah.
I was way more interested in the guys that were shredding. This was a different kind of shredding.
Oh, it really is.
A way different kind of shredding than the Dead did.
Oh, yeah. You know, well, it has muscle. But not like heavy metal muscle.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't testosterone driven.
It's groove muscle.
Machismo or anything, machismo or whatever they say. It's not like that at all. It was like very, very mental.
Yeah.
Mental muscle, you know?
And all SG Junior, P90s.
Totally.
You know?
And the first Yamaha SG1 or SG2.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was a dope guitar.
So back to your guitar, you got one. And I talked to Dave Menichetti. He had the SG3000, which was the super, super deluxe one. It was black with the crazy abalone binding.
With the mother of pearl binding and everything.
All that shit.
Beautiful. Those guitars are so expensive. They're like $5,000 on eBay now if you find them.
That's nuts. And you scored one for like $600.
I paid like $600 or $700
for it. And it's beautiful.
Yeah, and I got it on eBay and it needed work. So I had my guys at Yamaha like go through it and make it beautiful. But kept it all original intact, and it's just it's a beast.
God, it's killer, man. And like you said, you and I said, you don't need a Les Paul if you own one of these. And these are, if you're a guitar freak out there, these are the hidden gems, man. This and the early G&L Strat, the first year of the G&L Strat, I think is fantastic.
Yep,
the candy apple
telly.
Red one. Yeah, yeah, the telly, yeah. But these Yamaha SG3000s, 2000s are just smoking. Neck through the body, no bolt on neck, none of that bullshit. Looks like an SG on steroids.
Right, which is why they had to, in the States, sell them as SBG.
SBG.
Because of Gibson would always come after everybody for their patents and stuff, so they couldn't call it an SG2000.
Yeah.
So, but they sold them in Japan as SG2000s and 3000s, so they kept the SG name when they sold them only locally, domestically in Japan. But when Japan imported for sale over in the States, they had to change the name to SBG.
Now, how's the tone on that? Is it straight Les Paul?
It's a monster. Yeah. It's a monster, but it's coil tap, so it sounds like a Strat too. Which is wild.
For
anybody out there listening, it means it's, you know, you can split the pickup coils in half by flipping a switch.
Came stock like that?
And it would make the sound more thin and fun and kind of spanky sounding. And they came stock like that. They all had that.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's so great, man.
It's a great guitar. They're loudest pickups ever in those things.
What are the pickups?
I can't remember what they called those things. You know, Japan,
were they Yamaha
Japan
pickups?
Japan always had funny names for like all their pickups. You know, it's probably something called like the, you know, Dinosaur 2.
Yeah, yeah, right. T-Rex, humble, you know. Yeah, Godzilla humbucker.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, it's super.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful handcrafted piece of art. I mean.
This guitar, that's a thing, man. That's when Les Pauls had kind of started going downhill. In the 70s, they were just weighed like 800 pounds. They were 3-4 pieces of wood, you know, a lot of times. They were just like, you know, they're just not happening. And then these guys come out with this fine handmade. It's even got the cut in on the back, you know, so it sits up on you good.
Yeah.
And the neck radius is insane. And the inlays are over the top. They were really going for it.
Yeah, fastest necks ever. And like just all like body, you know, like tons of meat and body in the sound.
Well, I know we got to wrap it up, but before we do, you and I have been talking clip speakers lately.
Oh, yeah.
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 The Cornwalls.
Oh, man, those are so good.
Yeah, right.
I love all their, like, I mean, they're classic speakers.
It's funny because I wasn't really thinking about it till recently. I had Hero Jr. come to a show, a band. You'd love this band, Hero Jr. They're old school, out there doing it in a van and just playing rock to the people. You know what I mean? Like,
awesome.
I just love it. And we met up in Denver. It just happened they were playing the next day, so they came to my show. And they knew some guys there, and I dove back down into the rabbit hole of these speakers, and there they were, I just remember in the 70s when you go to somebody's house and they had them, you know, and you're like, wow, you know?
And it's funny, you know, now that stuff's so, the, you know, original ones are so collectible, you know, and they still make them all handmade.
In Alabama.
Yeah, is it Arkansas?
Yeah, that's it, Arkansas.
I know, it's crazy. Yeah,
they got the 70th anniversaries out right now, and you look at them, you go, wow, 70 years that speaker came out like
totally.
That.
Yeah, that's amazing. That with a Macintosh or Marantz set up, and it's just like your Fleetwood Mac never sounded so good.
I know, right? And they look beautiful.
They look amazing.
Like, I think it's Australian walnut with these amazing grills.
Yeah, it's beautiful. That's when, like we said, craftsmanship.
Yep.
You know?
That's it, man. That's what it all comes down to.
I know. Well, I can't wait to hear yours when you get them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. You got to come over to the house, man.
I would love that.
I mean,
yeah.
It's still not set up. I've been there 15 months. It's just a couch and records.
I'll cruise over on one of my bikes. And
you got to do it, man.
We'll go get lunch or something.
What do you got coming up? Anything?
I'm going to keep making records right now for a little bit. I got a bunch of stuff to finish up for people. And then
we'll
I'm
get the Struts on this show.
Yeah, man, you should.
That'd be great. Please set it up.
Yeah, they're great. And then I'm going to finish that up, and then it's... And then it's time. Oh, I'm going to Nashville next week as part of this two nights at the Ryman Auditorium. They do this thing for a charity, and it's called Dylan Fest.
Oh, yeah.
They have a whole like star-studded lineup of people.
I saw that.
All doing their favorite Dylan songs.
What songs are you doing?
I'm doing All on the Watchtower, like Jimi Hendrix.
Though. Wow.
I'm doing the Hendrix version.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, man.
What's your favorite Dylan record? People always ask me.
You know, it's funny. Blood on the Tracks is like, I think will always be a big one.
Yeah.
There's, and Blonde on Blonde, I can't help it. I mean, I even liked a lot of that weird, like, you know, kind of crazy Christian cocaine.
Those are my favorite.
Yeah.
Right now I'm on the One More Cup of Coffee era, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Infidels, unbelievable with Mick Taylor playing on it.
That record, I believe that record, one of those records was made in my old studio in Santa Monica before I built this one.
Wow.
It was called Rundown Studios, and it was where he would rehearse and record live, and he did a lot of that stuff there.
It's so great that he's still alive, man.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? I mean, he's out there just touring. Fuck, I mean, there's no one like Dylan.
No.
Look at all the different eras. The Christian era? I mean, who survives? You know,
and he's Jewish.
Yeah. And then it was like Jewish for people for Christians, or, you know? And then, like, you know, look at like 20 years ago before he does the big record, the comeback record, he's playing fucking just Ferris, you know? Like, just out there and like fine with it, you know?
Yeah.
And now just what a treasure, man.
I know. I feel pretty lucky just to be going and playing some of his jams at this thing, because it's such a lineup of people.
Who else is on it?
Oh, man.
It is a lot of people. Yeah,
it is. It's everyone from like L King to,
who puts that on?
Hold on, I'll tell you who all's on it. It's the Best Fest people.
That's right.
We do.
They do the Petty one.
We do like, Petty Fest.
Yeah,
we
you
do
guys
Dylan
do that.
Fest. We do Stones Fest. So yeah, Winona Judd.
Yeah.
Shaky Graves, Dwayne Eddy.
Oh yeah.
Valerie June, Boz Scaggs.
Winona Judd. You ever hear the song Grandpa? Judds did back in the day. It's a masterpiece song.
Oh, wow.
Man, Winona Judd is a gangster. I love her, man.
Oh, yeah. She's funny. She was there last year.
Now, you guys did the Goat's Head Soup record, right? Did you do that?
Oh, yeah. I did with Jesse Mallon.
Yeah, Jesse Mallon, because I had him on the show that week.
He did a charity show at the Roxy in L.A. Yep. And
it was his birthday.
and played Goat's Head front to back, and I did two songs, and that was a blast.
My boy Adam went, who's the talent coordinator at the Comedy Store, and he was like texting me like, "Are you here? This is fucking incredible."
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
It was real fun.
Yeah.
I played what did I play? I played Silver Train.
Oh, badass.
I played Silver Train and Hide Your Love.
Wow.
And I played them back to back because they were back to back on the record. And I sang Silver Train with Clem Burke on drums.
Wow. Clem Burke.
And
amazing.
He was so good. It was just like such a childhood, like little childhood, like thing come true where I'm like, Blondie was such a huge band for me growing up. And Clem Burke was one of my favorite drummers. I started playing drums when I was a kid because of Clem Burke, you know?
Oh, so, man. I remember their bass player.
I'm with Dave Catchings from Eagles of Death Metal over here.
Oh, yeah, Dave. Love him.
And Clem on drums. Yeah. And I was just like, man, this is badass.
That's so great.
I was freehanding it, too. No guitar. So I was like getting
you're just vocaling?
Just getting my Jagger on. It was
fun. Oh, man, I love it. That's funny. Goat's Head, that's what Axl said was his favorite record.
Interesting.
Back then, you know?
That's interesting because I kind of hear... You can listen to Silver Train and you can hear a little of Night Train.
Yeah, yeah, right?
You can hear where that came
Absolutely,
from.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, some of those grooves are not just Aerosmith.
No, no.
Because that record's really deep in Aerosmith territory in 70s Aerosmith.
Totally,
You know, like Rock's era. And,
oh, man.
And Toys in the Attic. But
Toys in the Attic is the blueprint of GNR.
Rats in the Cellar, too.
Oh, yeah, right?
You know, but those records, I mean, you can hear the Stones equally in that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a couple of them I felt like...
Sight for Sore Eyes, dude.
Oh, there's one song on there. There's one song on Goat's Head that is totally straight up...
Dancing with Mr. D?
Yeah. Well, there's Mr. Brownstone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's
dancing,
all,
dancing
it's
with
bitten.
Mr. D.
Yeah,
it's like
all,
when you look at it, the songs are parallel almost.
Right, that... Like all those grooves and stuff are heavily lifted.
Absolutely.
That was a band that was that was the right place in the right time and the right record.
That's the same thing as I always say, man. It's just fucking, you know, the lightning hit, man.
Oh, man.
The lightning hit. You know why, though? They had the songs.
What a great record.
They had the songs.
That what an incredible still to this day record to listen
to. Yeah, it's insane.
I put that record on when I'm like needing to like get through traffic.
Yeah. Did you see him sing Big Shot by Billy Joel a couple days ago at Dodger Stadium?
No.
Oh.
Axl?
Billy Joel headlined Dodger Stadium. Axl rolls out, does Big Shot in Highway to Hell, and he murders Big Shot.
Whoa.
You know, I mean, murders it.
That's amazing.
He said, with your hot cow having to close, you know, you had to be a big shot. Yeah. You know, that range, You had to prove it to the crowd.
Oh, my God. That's amazing. It's like a heavy metal... Ethel Merman.
just crushing it, though. With the high caliber claw, you know, fuck.
No, you had to be.
Yeah. I know.
That's so good.
Thanks, dude, man, for doing the show.
That was a blast.
Great.
Man.
And we got to go ride, you know.
Yeah.
We rode last time, but I haven't seen you in a fucking year.
I know.
You went on tour and shit, but let's do it.
Let's definitely do it, man. I'm around.
All right. Thank you, man, for doing the show. Thanks, guys, for tuning in. Good Butch's last record, man. That's still rocking. And it's Stay Gold. You guys will enjoy that. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review on iTunes. That's how we keep it in the top 100. Thanks, everybody. Candles lit.